Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting...
Let him play!
Down 21-0 in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that poor Porzingis!
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. Rolling into week number three of our football picks contest. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California and setting skies, as we would call it, and the return of our friend Ron in New Jersey to the program. So we're good to have him back. John will be sending his picks via the text tonight as he is on his incredibly exciting journey to the Pacific Northwest and eventually going to Las Vegas as he continues his vacation. So it's a week-long affair for our friend John in Connecticut, and we wish him the best as he takes care of a pretty exciting journey. So we'll hear more from that as he comes back next week. But on air, we have Ron, we have Andy, we have, and we have, let's see, anybody else? Ron, Andy, we have me, and then you've got our guest picker, who happens to be Mike in North Jersey. So let's just line it all up. We have a lot of teams still with many aspirations for college football hopes. In the NFL, some teams were the contenders, some teams were the pretenders. But, you know, there's a little bit of an overreaction after week number one of the NFL. So, you know, lots of football still left to be played. We are just getting started with everything on the table. And plenty of teams that we can say, let's pump the brakes a little bit on these guys. And other teams that you can say, you know, these guys really snuck up and surprised me. Well, which teams are going to be which? We're going to break it all down as we go into week number three of the Football Picks Contest. Let's hit it! Football Picks week three, and in week number two, a very good week for the panel. Three people went 3-1 last week. That includes Andy in Seattle, yours truly, Dave Medina in the city, and our guest picker, Dave in Queens, all 3-1. Good stuff out of all of them. And for the rest of the panel, they both went 2-2. Ron in New Jersey went 2-2, and John in Connecticut also went 2-2 in his picks between college and the NFL. So your standings as of 2 weeks are the following. Andy is 5-1, Dave is 5-1, Ron is 3-3, and John in the early going 2-4. The guest picks this week, or this year, are 4-2 on the season, and it's really anybody's, you know, it's too early. It's obviously early, but everybody in it, which is kind of a stupid statement, but it is in fact the case. So let's bring our panel in one by one, and we're happy to have everybody back for the most part, other than, I mean, with John on vacation and back with us once again. So let's begin by reintroducing Ron in New Jersey, welcome back to the Football Picks Contest. Mr. Ron, how's it going tonight?
Good, Dave. How are you?
Doing well. I hope you have had some good times. And I know that you were at Bar A the other week, and so I think that was pretty exciting stuff. I mean, that was a pretty good turnout. So.
Yeah. I was there. You know, we all thought it was going to be Mike's last show at Bar A, and now... maybe he's re-upping, he's saving the fans, so maybe we'll be there again next year. But it was really interesting meeting a lot of those guys. You know, Cap is exactly, you know, who he is on the board. You know, Timmy was cool as hell, and Marquis was one of the scariest motherfuckers you've ever seen in your life. So.
I have met him, so I know
exactly
what you're talking about.
exactly how you picture it.
That's awesome. So good times there. Yeah, we were talking about Carton last week, Ron, and it definitely was sort of a justice serves him right scenario for pretty much everybody. And he gets what he...
Well, he resigned. You saw that, Dave, right? He resigned tonight.
Oh, is that official? Ah.
Yeah, yeah. He put out a statement. He resigned.
Wow.
And it couldn't happen to a better fucking douchebag in the world. I'll tell you that much. You know, good riddance. You know, do your time in jail and come back and do a radio show in fucking Podunk, Kentucky, and you know, pretend like you're high and mighty there. I mean, for a guy who made his living, you know, the last 10 years shitting on everybody's missteps and you know, misfortunes and fucking, I mean, if you ever, Dave, I don't even know if you ever listened to the show or watched it, but I mean, it was the lowest form of humor that, you know, you could ever find, you know, it's fucking, you know, dick jokes and potty jokes and, you know, poop stuff. And, oh my God, the guy, and the guy made his living, you know, killing everybody, you know, every time Mike made it, he was like the fucking incarnation of Funhouse, you know, making fun of Mike every time he misspoke. You know, the guy was just a pure douchebag asshole. And you think maybe it's just his radio persona, and maybe in real life he's a decent guy just putting on a show. And then you read what the federal government found on the guy. And he's exactly, I mean, it's real life. He's exactly how he was on the show. He's fucking wheeling and dealing behind the scenes, trying to make pretend that he's a celebrity and scamming people out of money. I mean, the guy deserves whatever he gets. And, you know, it's funny. You know, I saw, you know, Andy put it on Twitter before. You know, all these fucking white knights coming out of the woodwork, you know, praying for him and praying for his family. I mean, come on. The guy don't give two shits about any of these idiots. And I mean, if he could, he would fucking scam them tonight and take their life savings and run to Costa Rica. And you got these morons basically like crying because a fucking radio host is resigning. I mean, it's especially in the world that we live in, where we just, you know, saw people devastated by hurricanes and, you know, Charlottesville and everything else like that, and you have people fucking crying and praying for Craig fucking Carton. I mean, what the fuck is wrong with our world, man? I don't get it.
That is tough to take, absolutely. And very well said. And all
sorry
that,
for that.
Very well said. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, it's a big story in New York sports, and as you mentioned, as part of that, Mike's sort of giving a little bit of a hint that he might come back as a method to keep the station afloat. So this is a big story, and we're going to see how that continues throughout the year. So as we do that, let's introduce back to the program Andy in Seattle. Andy, welcome back, and good stuff last week on the picks. How's it going tonight?
Pretty good. Yeah, the Carton stuff is funny stuff. And, you know, with Mike, I'm definitely a little torn because – As we all know, everyone's been building up December 2017 as his swan song, last hurrah. And, you know, this is the last football fall. This is his last stretch of college shows. This is, you know, last Super Bowl was his last Super Bowl scenario, the last Bar A. And but now if he quote unquote saves the station, it's, as our wise friend Yacht said, you know, he made all this big announcement of he's going to go off in the sunset. You know, some people would want him to just stick with his decision and let fan just go down the tubes. And, you know, that's almost as glorious as him coming back. I really have no dog in the fight. If he comes back, yay, more Mike to listen to and more Mongos to hear on the fan. And we can all make fun of that. But if he goes away and he sticks to his word and does something else or retires, and then we'll be able to see that the train wreck really, you know, go tenfold, because that station can't really survive with whoever is replacing Carton, whoever is replacing Mike. There's no substitute for Francesa, whether it's Evan Roberts or Joe or some other ding dong in the pipeline. But we'll see what happens. The Carton stuff is just a joke. Like Ron said, I read through that, you know, that long scenario where it's just like, you know, all these investors would wire money to Carton and CC1, whoever CC1 is, and then 10 seconds later, they're wiring those funds into the personal checking account, and then from those checking accounts, they're sending the money to all these casinos from Atlantic City to Vegas. It's just so shady. I felt like I needed to take a shower after reading it. It's so greasy.
That is unbelievable, really. I mean, and the fact that all of this just dropped on us like a week ago, it's incredible. Just an entire, whole system of thievery. And
let me ask you guys something, you know, because like, I had a scenario where I lost my wallet and I had to go to the bank. And, I had no check card, no license, no nothing. I went there with a fucking passport and, you know, every document I could find. And they still gave me a fucking hard time getting, macking out like $100 so I could live for the week. You know, they made me go through the manager and, like, you know, everybody came over like I was a fucking criminal, you know, because I lost my wallet. And you have that. And then you have on the opposite side, this guy is having hedge funds wire $2 million over to the fucking company who runs the Barclays Center. And then calling them up and saying, hey, you know, that accidentally went to you. Can you just wire it to me? And they wired him $2 million.
Oh, my God.
How does that happen? How does that happen? And nobody bats an eye over it. And, you know, I need 20 bucks so I could get gas. And and the bank is, like, killing me. Like, you can't make it up sometimes, man.
You really can't.
That's crazy. And the lawyer, I know the lawyer has to, you know, he's a lawyer, right? So he's going to defend Carton, you know, that's his job. But this hogwash over how it's a gross injustice and a misunderstanding and Craig's the victim, that's a comedy.
The best part of the whole thing is that this guy, and I believe in my heart of hearts, he made up that he had Tourette's syndrome. I mean, you know, it's like the only disease that you can fake. You know, you twitch a little bit and you yell out "fuck" every couple minutes and you have Tourette's. So he creates this foundation, and I mean, he's literally, you know, just taking all the money and putting it into fucking galas so he could meet celebrities and hitch them up to his scheme. I mean, it's made out of a movie. I mean, it should be a movie, you know. It's how stupid this guy was, you know, thinking that he would never get caught. It's unreal.
It's mind-blowing, really, is what it is. I mean, using charities and things like that as a means to funnel your personal interests, but in this case, gambling-related interests and trying to pay off gambling debts, it's just, like you guys said, you can't make it up. And as we talk about this some more, let's bring in Mike in North Jersey. Mike, welcome back to the program. How's it going tonight? And any other thoughts on Carton?
Well, Andy and Ron have done a great job so far. And quick shout out to Ron. Your tweet about how you were proud to be a Devils fan actually got featured in the NHL.com article about that kid getting the 10,000 retweets or whatever it was for the season ticket. So good job out of you.
No way, really?
Yeah, wow. They showed like a bunch of tweets. You were one of them. So I guess they are paying attention out there on the social media. But getting off the Devils, because I don't want to sidetrack this program here. You guys are dead on about Carton. I mean, that idiotic statement he released the other day, I will be found, you know, just say nothing. The feds let him get away with this for so long because he was such an idiot. He was just building evidence against himself. I mean, there's records of him sending emails. Like, he wasn't duped. He was obviously running the show and using his position as a public figure in order to allow the banks to wire him money. That's why they did it. But for him to come on and say, oh, this is the greatest fight of my life, shut the fuck up. You were creating fraudulent charities in order to get money to pay off your gambling addiction. I mean, yeah, you feel bad for his kids, but, you know, the worst thing is, like, you have a shit in person as a father, to be honest with you. And, you know, it's funny how he was so jealous of Mike and getting that 30 for 30. And then Mike shot back, well, there's never going to be a 30 for 30 about you. Well, now there might actually be a 30 for 30 about you.
That is, I mean, you're right. I was thinking that that's the first thing I thought about when this broke. I'm like, this could be a 30 for 30. This might actually happen now. I mean, it's unreal. It really is. And obviously, you know, this is a, we're doing a football show, but this is definitely related because on the show you had Craig Carton hosting with a guy named Boomer Esiason, former NFL player. He played for the Jets, played for the Bengals. And to think about like what he's thinking right now, I wonder if you guys feel the same as I do that he was really blindsided with all of this. Because, I mean, Boomer's not the brightest bulb in the bunch anyway. So do you think that he kind of had an inside bit on this at all? Or was he completely blindsided?
I could go either way on it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think he was blindsided. You could tell, like, when he found out the news on the air, he wasn't happy, and he tried to distance himself a little bit. But, you got to understand, he can't come out and directly say, you know, Craig's a fucking idiot, he should go to jail, he's got to, you know, do some sort of public support. But, I mean, if you read between the lines of what he's been saying the past few weeks, I mean, he obviously knows that something's up and he wants nothing to do with them. So, I mean, talk about losing, losing all your friends and your allies over some stupid shit you did because you don't know how to stop your gambling. I mean, you know, like I said, he deserves everything he gets.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of another guy, another New York sports figure that was just as skeevy, but maybe not to the degree, but just as big of a liar. Lenny Dykstra. It reminds me so much of that. Like, he had a big little empire going with the Players Magazine and the car wash, and I'm just reminded of like how he had built the car wash, which was, by the way, people who went to the car wash said that it was a ripoff. The car wash is out here in California, and I was just thinking about how much of a ripoff that guy was too. So there's a little bit of a parallel, but this is a much bigger crime against humanity, obviously. So we'll keep following this story here on the program as we continue our football pick. So let's go back to football for a sec, and we'll do recap first. And since we hadn't heard from Ron in a while, we'll give it to you first on what happened last week. It was a pretty exciting week. I mean, Oklahoma, I got to give them a standing ovation. And then that, Andy, you called that big time. I mean, that was a bigly win at the Horseshoe. Their defense was just hammering down Ohio State. Couldn't believe it. USC beat Stanford its own game. That was impressive. And Clemson outlasts Auburn. And there's quite a few other things happened, but let's go give it to the panel for the recap. So we start with Ron. Your thoughts about week two in college football?
Yeah, you know, Dave, I'll be honest with you. I wasn't really into Oklahoma, Ohio State. I don't know why. To me, though, that game just doesn't elicit a lot of juice. I don't know. Maybe it's because both programs are a little unlikable. But, you know, good for Oklahoma and for Baker Mayfield. You know, he's been there for like 10 years, so he should play the way he did. But, you know, good for him. And, you know, you always have in the back of your mind with Ohio State, I mean, every time you think they lost a lot of talent and they're going to take a step back, I mean, they always seem to, to pull a rabbit out of their ass and, you know, find all these guys. But, you know, now it is starting to show this year, and you even saw it in the first game against the first half against Indiana, where Indiana was, you know, taking it to them. You know, maybe they don't have as much firepower as they used to have on offense. And, you know, let's be honest with ourselves, JT Barrett isn't the next great quarterback. He's been there. He's another guy who seems like he's been there forever. And he's okay at managing the game, but he's nothing special. And it seems like he's not good enough to lift the new players that they have in the skill positions. And, it was surprising to see Oklahoma beat them the way that they did, but good for them. I was into Clemson Auburn, and I'll say this, man, Clemson's defense looks legit this year, and you know, as it's almost like a reversal last year. Their offense was so good, the defense was suspect, and this year, I mean, the defense is out of this world. And you know, the offense is just getting by. They could have killed Auburn. And you know, the end score was a little misleading.
But also in that game, I mean, you see Auburn has Jared Stidham. And, you know, when we saw him at Baylor, I mean, the guy was launching bombs left and right. And I mean, when he came out of high school, that's what he was known for, was his, you know, his rocket arm. And then you see them, you see him go to Auburn, and he's throwing, you know, 2-3 yard out passes in Gus Malzahn's offense. And it just, it doesn't work. It looks terrible. You know, it's just another Malzahn. You know, he seems like he's a guy who just doesn't get it, like Les Miles. You know, you could put whoever you can find at quarterback, whatever talent they have, and it's the same thing. It's, you know, two-yard screen, you know, 3-yard quick out. It's, you know, move the chains and run the ball, and it just doesn't work in today's college football. So it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the year goes for Auburn. So those two games, I guess, were the big ones last week. You know, it was there's a couple other good games. You know, Georgia, Notre Dame went down to the end. Georgia won with their freshman quarterback. You know, Notre Dame looks like Notre Dame always looks, to be honest with you. You know, they have flashes of talent, and you think that you know, they're gonna turn it on, and you know, this young kid at quarterback is going to be the real deal. And the next thing you know, they're giving up a big play at the end of the game and losing by a field goal. So, you know, it's same old for Notre Dame. And yeah, I guess that's my reflections of last week.
Yeah, and that game was definitely closer than I expected, because I think Dave and Queens and I, we both thought that Georgia was going to dominate that game. That wasn't really the case, but they nevertheless ended up toughing out Notre Dame at South Bend, and they did win the game by a point. So ultimately, we were proven correct, but just not as resoundingly as perhaps we expected. Either way, I think Notre Dame is once again a little overblown, and we'll see how their season finishes. So let's go to Andy in Seattle and get your recap of week number two.
Yeah, you know, I was into it from Louisville, North Carolina, all the way till the end of San Diego State, Arizona State, and Boise State, Washington State. It was a marathon out here in Seattle. And, you know, that Clemson-Auburn game, Ron nailed it. Not enough offense out of Auburn, you know. They kind of shot themselves in the foot in that first half, first drive of the game, settling for a 19-yard field goal and then another chip shot field goal to make it 6-0 when, you know, you leave 8 points on the board. You know, 6-0 looks a lot less flashy than 14-0, which it easily could have been. Give up a touchdown late in the first half to Clemson, and now all of a sudden Clemson's got momentum. And in the second half, Gus Malzahn never seemed to want to make any sort of adjustments with the offense. I don't know if any adjustment would have stopped that Clemson pass rush. That was pretty amazing. How many sacks it was, 11 sacks, 12 sacks. And, you know, the Clemson offense was, they did just enough to get by. I think that Bryant kid's only going to get better as the season goes along. I don't know who this Clemson defense coordinator is. I don't know his name, but obviously he's pretty talented. The cameras are showing him. He keeps it up. I'm sure he'll be one of those next coaches that a high-profile school might try to get to take over a coaching position. The Notre Dame-Georgia game was pretty entertaining. You know, it's a weird – you don't see a lot of SEC schools go to South Bend, so that was kind of a neat situation to watch. That USC-Stanford game, I did not expect USC to rock and roll like they did, but it was back and forth for about a quarter and a half, and then USC kind of took over, elevated their game. That receiver they have, DeAndre, I don't know his last name, but he was a Washington State recruit commit, and he just looked all world out there, especially in that second half for USC. The Washington State-Boise State game, that ended pretty late out here, so that was just a wild game, triple overtime. It was 31-10 in the fourth quarter. There's no way Boise State should have lost that game. I mean, they just got beyond Cardwell tight. The backup quarterback, you know, should have just thrown this ball away or took a sack. He kind of just one or more ridiculous pick sticks to a defensive lineman you'll ever see. Then when Washington State was punting the ball, it just happened to hit a Boise State guy right in the back of the head, and just so Washington State got the ball back. It was an epic comeback for Washington State, and then I was just watching a bunch of, you know, weird off the main radar games, like Arizona versus Houston. It was Houston's first game. This guy, Kyle Allen, for whatever reason, scouts are drooling over him. I guess he's going to be pretty good. He was at Texas A&M, but he transferred. Major Applewhite is the coach at Houston. They didn't really score as many points as I thought, but they still won outright, which was fine. Arizona, not very good. But that was, you know, a late night game. You had Washington State, Boise State, San Diego State, Arizona State, and that really Sherm, Houston, Arizona. But I love those types of games, and so that's what I was occupied with for week two.
Yeah, the late-night Pac-12 is becoming a thing, and Ron turned me on to a program called the 24/7 college football program, and they call that Pac-12 After Dark, and I think that's a great name for it because it really is. Like, you get some really wild games, and we'll see more of that this year as well. So let's go to Mike in North Jersey for your week two recap.
Well, Dave, it's never good news when Notre Dame gets the benefit of a vid mush and is unable to pull out a job there against Georgia. So, you know, the obvious pick was Georgia. I mean, they were getting 4.5 points, which made no sense. That's why I brought it up with you and John on the last golf podcast, that you see this with Notre Dame, even in a year where they're coming off a terrible year, they lose to Sean Kizer. And then you get all this hype before the season, after most of the offseason, where they're like, you know, it's a rebuilding year. Then you start seeing, well, Wimbush is a dark horse Heisman candidate, blah, blah, blah. Maybe they can sneak into a New Year's Six Bowl. And they come out, and Ron put it well. They look like the same old Notre Dame, flashes of good play. They got Wimbush is obviously talented, but he can't put it all together, and that's why he hasn't been a starting quarterback for what it is, a redshirt junior, so a few years. But and then Brian Kelly, of course, cannot control his temper and snaps at a reporter for asking a valid question after the game. So same old with Notre Dame, another one possession loss. Going on to Oklahoma, Ohio State, you know, I don't follow college football as closely as you guys, but I wasn't shocked by that because, you know, JT Barrett, for all his physical talent, he really hasn't progressed, and Ohio State did not look good against Indiana. And, you know, Oklahoma with this new coach and Baker Mayfield, who, you know, for all his experience, and all this talent, you know, I wasn't surprised that if you brought an Oklahoma team and you know that they're going to have a lot of talent there with a good quarterback and an experienced quarterback, that they would come in and beat Ohio State. I didn't think it would be by the margin that they did, but not really surprised by the result, a little bit surprised by the score. Then Clemson, just, yeah, obviously a dominant defensive effort there against Auburn. And another bit of a surprise, and good for you, Vid, USC, just, you know, for all the trouble they've had with Stanford historically, I mean, they just absolutely wiped the floor with them last week. So things look good for the Trojans. Obviously, you know, they're a program that brings in a lot of talent. They seem to be finally over the whatever they call it, the trouble that they got into, and, you know, obviously the complete mess of the coaching situation over, like, basically since Pete Carroll left. So things going in the right direction for them. So just a big statement win by them against Stanford. So good job. And that Notre Dame USC game, oh boy, that could get ugly. So not looking forward to that.
Now, well, you know, it really does look good so far for SC, and I got to give it to the defense. I really thought that defense was going to get worked. It was really quite the opposite. And And I will cite a line in the Athlon preview for Stanford, which warned us that the defensive line on Stanford's side is actually still kind of not there yet. So that did happen to play out. And I'll tell you this, I mean, that offensive line for USC is by far their greatest asset so far, and so too is the backfield. I mean, Ronald Jones, really fun guy to watch, and Carr also doing a pretty good job in the backfield. So really it's been a very good start for SC and amidst some pretty decent expectations. I'll tell you more about what's coming up later when we do the preview of the next few games. Before we do that, though, I want to ask you guys a quick question about the night games. Why did they have five games on at once? Like, it was very difficult to follow all of them. You had to basically give up some plays on one to get to another one. You had, it, for all intents and purposes, USC-Stanford, the Auburn game with Clemson, then you had the Oklahoma-Ohio State, and the Georgia-Notre Dame game were all on simultaneously. I just thought, that's ridiculous. I don't know what that was about. They probably won't do that again, but were you surprised that they put that many games on simultaneously? I mean, anybody who wants to answer this can, but I guess I'll give it to Ron first.
Well, Dave, I'll tell you what, seeing this week's slate of games and next week's and the week after that, I mean, I guess we should just feel lucky that we had so many, watchable games in prime time.
True.
Because the next couple of weeks, there's it's pretty barren as far as big time matchups go. So it seems like they do that every year. They load up the first two or three weeks of the season with the big time non conference games, and you get a stretch where you get maybe 4 or 5 weeks where there's not really much there, and until you weed out the real pretenders and contenders, and then you get the big matchups come October and November. But I guess we should just feel lucky that we had so many games to actually get into on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think from that standpoint, it did exceed my expectation, because every one of those games was pretty good. I love the USC game got away, but it was pretty good for a while. And I know that, speaking of the game I was watching, it was back and forth in the first half. It was just the second half when SC really took over. All the other games were back and forth too. So it was until, in the Oklahoma case, they took over end of the second quarter, and then it was over. It was pretty crazy. So let's get to it, guys. We're gonna look at this week's games, and actually, Ron's about right. There really is only one marquee game this week. And I don't even know if I would necessarily consider this a marquee game, but I think many others may. Clemson at Louisville. And the reason I'm a little skeptical about this game is because Louisville's defense is so bad. And I've actually had an issue with Lamar Jackson's throwing ability of late. I don't know if his arm's really that good. So that's my only concern with that game. The other games are what we would classify as not marquee games, but possibly sneaky good. And I'm even going to throw in Texas-USC. Even though Texas is getting 16.5, I still think this is going to be a pretty competitive game. I think we may be quitting on them a little too soon. I think it should be a good game. And SC hopefully will play just as well defensively as it did last time. And Texas could have some good plays from Bichelle and company. We'll see. Other games, Colorado State-Bama. And Andy, I'll be interested to hear what you have to say about that. San Diego State Stanford. This could get interesting because it's kind of like the same team playing itself. Memphis UCLA. I will get into that in picks. Oregon Wyoming and Tennessee Florida. So a bunch of these little games that could end up being really exciting and one marquee game this week. And we'll start with the previews with Andy in Seattle.
All right, Dave. Yeah, that Clemson-Louisville game is definitely the marquee contest of the slate, because obviously it's got playoff implications. On paper, I would definitely take Clemson. It's a coaching mismatch. You know, maybe 5 years ago you wouldn't say that, but Dabo has proven himself. And Louisville, Petrino is the same guy at Louisville as he was at Arkansas, as he was at Western Kentucky, as he was at Atlanta in the NFL, as he was at Louisville the first time. He's just a slimy, arrogant, angry dipshit. And he's got no respect for defense. And as good as Lamar Jackson is and as talented as he can be and the plays that he can make with both his legs and his arm, I think he's going to have a hard time having a good performance against Clemson's defense. And, you know, as we've seen, Clemson's offense isn't really anything out of this world, but I think their talent on defense and from a coaching standpoint, I think by the end of the game, you're just going to have a frustrated Petrino. You know, he'll do something stupid like go for it on like 4th and 8 from, you know, the 47-yard line, just something stupid like that. You're going to see the Ooga Booga come out of Petrino when it's all said and done in that game. Alabama, Colorado State, you know, just another tune-up game for Alabama. You know, they got three running backs, basically, that could all run for 1,000 yards if they get enough carries between Harris, Scarborough, and Jacobs. And Hurts is only getting better. I don't really know much about Colorado State this year, but they're big underdogs. You're right about that Stanford-San Diego State game. You know, San Diego State's coach, Rocky Long, is a big defense-first guy. You worry about them being able to handle, you know, the size of Stanford for 60 minutes, but I'd like to see San Diego State be competitive in that game. That'd be fun. You know, Notre Dame, BC, that's a Catholic rivalry. You know, BC stinks. I wouldn't touch that game. South Carolina, Kentucky, all of a sudden South Carolina's 2-0 and people think they might be SEC East contender. Florida, Tennessee, I guess if you want to call that a good game because both teams are ranked, but that's just kind of a cosmetic thing. You know, Florida's got no offense. Tennessee is a tough watch for the eyeballs, but that's the CBS marquee game. Oregon is going to Wyoming. That's kind of a strange matchup, but Oregon laid an egg in the second half. Last week they were up 42-14, and they did not score a single point in the second half. It reminded me of either the Alamo or the Holiday Bowl a couple years ago when they were up bigly against Baylor, and Baylor came back and won in overtime because Oregon could not score a point in their second half. So watch out for Oregon. You know, Wyoming's got that quarterback that's supposedly going to be the next Carson Wentz. He looked like poo against Iowa. So I'll be interested to see how Wyoming does against Oregon in their own building, getting 14.5. We'll see what happens there. And, you know, there's a couple other games, but that's basically all. That's it. That's all I got to say.
All right. Let's go to Ron for your preview of the Week 3 college matchups.
Yeah. I mean, Andy touched on all the big games. You know, the Colorado or the Clemson Louisville game, I guess, is, you know, the big one this week. And it almost feels a little bit like deja vu with last year's Louisville team, where they got hot out of the gate. Lamar Jackson put up these incredible numbers, and I believe it was either like the 3rd or 4th week they went into Florida State, or Florida State came there and they ran them over. So you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they did that to Clemson. It really wouldn't, just because Clemson's, you know, defense is all world. Lamar Jackson is a special player too. And when he's hot, he's hot. And if he gets rolling at home on a Saturday night, they're going to be tough to beat. I do agree with Andy though. Dabo Swinney is head and shoulders better than Petrino. And, you know, I know Sweeney's a Mongo, and, you know, we've said that from the start on this show. But, you know, you do need somebody like that in college football to balance out the guys like Saban and Urban Meyer, the guys who, you know, are successful and take themselves way too seriously and walk around like they have a stick up their ass. You need someone like Sweeney, who's, I mean, you could tell he's, you know, genuinely having fun, and the kids love him, and You know, he makes it interesting. He's always got a quick line with the reporters after the game. So I'll be rooting for Clemson, but it wouldn't shock me if Louisville beat them on Saturday night. As far as the other games go, there's not a lot there. Florida Tennessee just doesn't do anything for me. I'd love to see a 0-0 tie. With each team missing like 10 field goals, just because they're both horrendous to watch. LSU Mississippi State might have some juice in it. LSU's looked really good the first 2 weeks. Mississippi State has a pretty good quarterback, Nick Fitzgerald. So that one should be a pretty good game. Not a lot of people are talking about that one. That's a little under the radar. I'd rather watch that any day of the week than Florida, Tennessee, to be honest with you. The UCLA-Memphis game should be interesting to watch, Dave. UCLA is coming across country to play a noon start time on Saturday against a decent Memphis team. It might be one of those games where UCLA is looking past it, thinking that they could show up and have a cakewalk, maybe believe in their own hype a little bit. So that should be an interesting one to watch early in the day. Besides that, I mean, there's not a lot on the schedule that'll get you going. But, usually on a weekend like this where you don't think there's any good games, you usually get three or four either upsets or ones that come down to the last second and really surprise you. So, that's why we watch, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's happened time and time again in over the course of college football history. So it's going to be an exciting time, I think, in certain moments. And let's continue the conversation with Mike in North Jersey. Mike, what are you seeing from this week's matchups?
Well, Andy and Ron did a very good job there, and both know a lot more about college football than I do and follow it a lot more closely than I do. So I'll a couple of my picks go on about games that we've discussed, so I'll get to those in a bit. But I'll just touch on that Notre Dame-Boston College game real quick, because I was thinking about taking this because the line went from 14.5 to 13.5. Now, on paper, Notre Dame should be able to cover that with no problem. But, historically, Boston College gives Notre Dame fits. It doesn't seem to matter how bad they are. It's just this big, it's the big rivalry between the Irish Catholic schools. So, and actually, I think that's a pretty good theme for this week, is we have a lot of name matchups that might not, they don't match the talent. Like the talent doesn't match the names.
Interesting.
For instance, we got USC Tech. Yeah, we have USC Texas, which is the rematch of one of the greatest games of all time there, where I know, Dave, you probably don't want a reminder of this one with Vince Young with one of the all-time great performances in that Rose Bowl to win the national championship. But, Texas really losing to Maryland like that, that knocked all the juice out of this game. So unless USC is – unless they are having a party with, lots of booze, prostitutes, and cocaine, I don't see any way they're not winning this one. So, and then, of course, that Florida-Tennessee, oh, my God, both of those teams. Tennessee, you guys make fun of them every year, and you're right, because every year they're almost like Notre Dame. It's the same thing, big-time name. They got, 100,000 people in that stadium there in Knoxville or wherever the fuck the University of Tennessee is. I'm actually not sure. But
it is actually Knoxville.
It is Knoxville. They're terrible. Florida, we saw them against Michigan. And we know that Michigan has a talented defense. But, come on, that offense is just – that's just embarrassing. So not much juice there. That Oregon-Wyoming game, I know I have heard you guys mention about Wyoming with that quarterback, but Oregon, after a down couple of years with Chip Kelly leaving, they seem like they might be on the way back, so I wonder if they can take care of business there. But getting back to that Notre Dame game, the reason I got off of it was we have Brian Kelly acting like a Mongo again. when you have a quarterback that's going to struggle with confidence a little bit, you don't say things like, oh, he's a work in progress. You know, you don't tell him that. I don't understand why he does this. You know, you would see it with every time Kizer made a mistake. Every time any quarterback, Golson, same thing. He comes over the sideline and Kelly's face just turns. Like, he has to go to the I'm afraid this guy's going to die of a heart attack in a few years. Seriously, his face turns bright red. So just starting off with him flipping out, being asked a legitimate question about one possession games, and then saying shit like, well, Wimbush is a work in progress. We know that. He knows that. But the thing is, you have to give these guys confidence. It's counterproductive. He's obviously feeling the heat, knowing that his job is probably on the line here. So I'm not going to touch this game because now Wimbush probably going to be looking over his shoulder a little bit. He's not going to have the confidence, which is really the big thing that he needs because he has all the physical tools. So, you know, Notre Dame should win, but would it surprise anyone coming off that tough loss against Georgia? Would it really surprise anyone looking at Notre Dame and their history if they drop this one and it just starts a hellaciously bad season with Kelly knowing that he's done? It wouldn't shock me, so I'm not touching that game. As for the rest of the slate, getting back to the question you actually asked before, Dave, you know, it was nice that we had all those games yesterday, but, you know, for me particularly, I would have liked if they were spread out so I could have watched a little bit more of them. But, you know, with television companies these days, you know, I almost expect them to do things that don't make sense. Yeah. They wonder why their ratings are down. It's because you're being managed ineptly, frankly.
Wow. And, you know, Mike is certainly has a beat on the semantics of television broadcasting. We talk about that a lot during our golf show. So this was definitely, to me, I think it would have been better served if there was a really good quality 3:30 game. Like, the Notre Dame game could have been a 3:30 game. That would have been good, you know, something like that. So, but it's nice that we have the games at all. So that's another good point. And then Ron made that point earlier. So let's go to the picks, and we'll be really fast. At least I will be, as I started off here, for week number 3 in college. Let's start. Okay, pick number 1, a pick that I think is going to be checkered, but I got to go with it. I love Memphis plus 3.5. against UCLA. Ron hit it on the nose. UCLA, after having a dramatic comeback with A&M, then beating Hawaii by a bunch of points. You know, it's as if people have forgotten that they're coached by Jim Mora. They can't run the ball, and their defense is just pretty poor. I don't think that they're... I really think that they're going to have all of that. And then the time change, which tends to render West Coast teams a little sluggish, and I certainly can sympathize with that living out here. So Memphis plus 3.5. Game number 2. We're gonna go off the island a little bit here. Coastal Carolina minus 2 again at UAB. The reason I go with Coastal Carolina is because they're two teams that have had dabblings with the, you know, relegation or disassociation of the program or being in the FCS. But Coastal Carolina seems to be on a trajectory that could, in optimal circumstances, mirror that of Appalachian State. They went 10-2 last year. I think that was an FCS play. They are now in the FBS. And I like where they're going. So we're going to go Coastal Carolina. So again, Memphis plus 3.5 and Coastal Carolina minus 2 for week number 3. On we go. So let's go to Andy in Seattle, our leader of the contest. And Andy, whenever you're ready, let's get your week 3 picks.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Game number 1... we're going to take USF, so University of South Florida, giving 17.5. They're hosting Lovie Smith in the Illinois Fighting Illini. Don't ask me why, but I watched way too much of the Illinois-Western Kentucky game yesterday or on Saturday. It was a joke. Western Kentucky looked atrocious. But Illinois, they actually won. They look like dog do too. I know this program likes to... make fun at Lovie Smith's expense. So we'll try to have a pick at Lovie Smith's expense, too. USF is a team that John identified as a sneaky team that could potentially play their way into a New Year's Day Bowl. They've got a really good quarterback. They've only played one game. I believe it was, I forget if it was against, I think it was against San Jose State. San Jose State or Rice, I'm not sure. I think it was San Jose State. Anyway, they started slow, but they ended up having a pretty good show in the second half. Didn't cover, but had a week off. They were supposed to play UConn last week, but the Hurricane obviously put the kibosh on that. So they should be looking forward to playing their first game at home in front of their fans and students. And, you know, Illinois is a disaster. I don't think they should play, have a letdown effect. I think they just stink. So regardless of how they play, they're not going to lose by less than 17.5 points. So give me USF minus 17.5 for game number one. Game number two, another big spread. We're going to take Wisconsin Badgers giving 17 at BYU. So they're on the road, and they're giving 17 at BYU. We're not fans of Wisconsin, but every year, whenever we go against them, they always end up kind of, you know, rubbing it in our face, and they end up, you know, winning. So we lose the bet. But they're, you know, same year, same team every year, basically. They're physical. Their passing game isn't going to thrill you. If anything, will put you to sleep. But they're fundamentally sound. They've got big offensive linemen. They got big defensive linemen. They run the ball really well. BYU is a team this year that just cannot score. They literally didn't score against LSU, and they struggled to put up points against Utah last week in the, what do they call BYU, the Utah game, the Holy War? I don't know, something like that. But in their big rivalry game, they just laid a big egg against Utah, and that was at home as well. So now they have to get ready for a Wisconsin team that should out-physical them over 60 minutes. You know, it's definitely going to be a size advantage for Wisconsin. And I just can't see BYU. They cannot score. They cannot score this year. So give me Wisconsin minus 17 on the road to coincide with the home team, USF, giving 17.5 to Illinois, week three college picks.
Thanks for the pick, Sandy. And now we go to Ron in New Jersey. Ron, it's all yours. You have the floor when you're ready.
All right, Dave. First game, I'm going to take Virginia Tech minus 21.5 over East Carolina. East Carolina is probably one of the worst teams in college football. They lost week one at home against James Madison. They lost by 20 at home against James Madison. And lost by 36 last week to West Virginia, a team that Virginia Tech beat the week previous. So I'm going to take Virginia Tech minus 21.5 in that game. And game number two, I'm going to go Oregon minus 14.5 over Wyoming. I like the kid in Wyoming, Josh Allen. You know, he certainly has an or at least week one, he didn't look like he was going to be able to live up to the hype this year. You know, they played a decent Iowa team and really got shut down. And last week, they played some no-name team and won 27-0. But they're just not a very good team around him. He could end up being an all-world quarterback, a top five pick in the draft. But Wyoming just doesn't have the talent to keep up with most teams. And Oregon, I know they laid an egg the second half last week. They still have a lot of firepower. They kind of took their foot off the gas that second half. I think Oregon wins this game by three touchdowns easily. To me, the line is a little short. I think a lot of people are still believing the Wyoming hype that some people fabricated to start the year. So that's my second pick. I'm going to take Oregon minus 14.5 over Wyoming.
All right, thanks for the picks, Ron. Now we go to John in Connecticut's picks, and from the Pacific Northwest, he sends these via the text. We start with game number one. He goes for the biggie. Louisville plus 3.5 at home against Clemson. You know, he's going for the upset here. I thought that was pretty interesting. So that's game number one. Game number two, John selects SDSU plus 10 against Stanford, also at home. So So two home dogs. He goes with Louisville plus 3.5 and SDSU, the Aztecs plus 10 in the week 3 college picks. All right, so let's now go right to Mike in North Jersey. And Mike, we are ready for your week 3 college picks.
Okay, for my first pick, I'm going to go out to Columbus, Ohio, and take Ohio State getting 30 points, or I should say they're minus 30, whatever, against Army. Yeah, excuse me. But mixed up my words there. So, you know, if Funhouse were following the show, I'm pretty sure there'd be a tweet up about this with a nice 30-second video of me scoring, but he doesn't. Anyway, yeah, you look at this game, and you can look at it from a few different angles. Army, obviously, they've improved from where they were a couple of years ago. They're hard to prepare to play on 1 week, but if you look at this game, and it's a physical mismatch, and, you know, the players at Army, obviously, they're cadets first and they're football players second, and if you just look at the size requirements they have to you know, be at West Point, I'm sorry, they're not going to be able to match up at all. And 30 points. So even if they score, you're telling me that Ohio State's not going to win this game 52-21 or something like that? I'm sorry. And you know that Urban Meyer, he probably has some respect for the armed forces. So he's not going to run it up out of control. But with that loss to Oklahoma and with what Baker Mayfield's antics after the game, there's going to be a bit of a statement here by Ohio State. Now, if they don't make this statement, it probably means there's some trouble for the program. But I feel pretty confident that just the sheer level of talent, and even if Ohio State takes out their starters and puts in their second and third team, you're not going to run a triple option or a wishbone. You're not going to get to the edge. You're not going to be able to. They're just too big. They're too fast. Kudos to Army for even playing this game, but I just don't see how they have the talent on the field to stay within 30 points of Ohio State. So, to me, yeah, it's always a little tricky with these bigger games, with these big point spreads, I mean. But I don't see any way that, well, I mean, it could happen, but obviously I don't think it's likely that they can stay within 30 points of Ohio State, although Ohio State has struggled. But, you know, just like I said, way too much talent. JT Barrett, for all his shortcomings, the guy has all the physical talent in the world. He's going to be an absolute nightmare for them. And my second game, I will actually go that I saw that UCLA was minus 3 on Vegas Insider Day at Memphis.
So, we can go with that if you're taking the Bruins. We can get it down to 3.
Okay. You know, if I'm not correct about that, you can leave it at 3.5, and I'll still take it. But yes, I know that this has all the makings of a trap for UCLA. It's always a little bit risky taking West Coast teams coming in to play a 12:00 start on the East Coast, but I'm a big fan of Josh Rosen. You know, he got a lot of slack for that interview where he said that, you know, college football players aren't really students and they don't have time. Well, you know, frankly, he's right. If you're going to take an actual major, you know, not just sign up for the classes the football team wants you to do, college, yeah, you have a lot of time to party, but, you know, there's always like a year or a couple semesters where you got to hunker down, you got to do your work. Now, just from my background in youth hockey and stuff, I couldn't imagine having to juggle, like actually take school seriously and play a sport like that full time. So I think he was right. I think he got a lot of heat, which was uncalled for, but I'm really a big fan of this guy. Just the moxie he showed in that big comeback against Texas A&M. And you know, that was hilarious because you guys hit it on the head. I mean, that is Texas A&M in a nutshell right there, like a whole season of game. But getting back to the Memphis game, yeah, we know that Memphis has some very good talent at running back, and UCLA has struggled against the run. But, you know, with only a 3-point, with them only getting 3 points, I think that UCLA will win this game maybe by 10 points or a touchdown even, but this is more a pro Josh Rosen pick here. I think he probably understands the importance of this game. He's probably read up on stuff, and I think they're going to come in and they're going to know that, hey, this is a potential trap here and we got to be ready for this. So, you know, if the points, I thought that maybe the line would change a little bit throughout the week. It hasn't. Like I said, before, obviously there's always that West Coast team coming to the East Coast, and I think records against the spread aren't necessarily good, but I think this is a guy who's just the quarterback, Rosen. You know, I'm going to put my eggs in the basket with him here, and I'm going to trust him that that he'll be able to put up enough offense against a Memphis team, which, you know, granted, it was in a rainstorm, but they only won by 8 points against, what, Louisiana Lafayette or Louisiana Monroe, one of those Louisiana Dash where bumblefuck teams that you wonder how they're Division 1A. But if they only won by 8 points there, I don't see them sticking within three of UCLA. Now, it'll be a little bit, it's not going to be a complete blowout, but, you know, I'm expecting at least a touchdown here. So give me UCLA -3 at Memphis.
All right. So I confirmed it on Vegas Insider. It is 3 points. So we'll go with three for the matchup, and the two of us are head to head. So I think it will, either way, it looks like it's going to be a fun game. And at least in the first half, it could go back and forth. For all I've spoken about UCLA's bad defense, Memphis' defense is just as bad. It might even be worse. So we could have a lot of touchdowns in that one. So let's get to the NFL now. Yay! All right, NFL. Let's let's get to it. So we've won after an interesting start. Certainly some surprises. And we go back to Ron in New Jersey for the recap of the opening week of the NFL. Ron, what'd you see from the week?
Well, we saw a lot of shitty games, I guess, if you want to be honest.
No, it was pretty bad. I can't argue with that.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, you get into the witching hour, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock on Sunday, and there's really not much there. I mean, it almost seems like, I don't know if it's just me, but the past couple of years, week one of the NFL is almost like in, you know, a fifth week of preseason with the way teams play. I mean, some teams just come out completely flat. A lot of teams just are sloppy, and I think that's what you saw this week. I mean, you pick a game and you probably, you know, have a sloppy performance. You had Andy Dalton looking like, frankly, like Andy Dalton, you know, just stinking up the joint against Baltimore. You know, it's funny, you know, he looks like a competent quarterback every once in a while, and then, you know, he reminds himself that he's Andy Dalton, and he has a game like he did last week where he throws four interceptions and has his fans throwing shit at him as he's walking out of the stadium. See, I mean, you had a lot of games like that. You had the Jets and the Bills, which was just, you know, unwatchable as far as I'm concerned. You know, it was just horrendous play by both teams. Even, you know, the Giants-Cowboys game was just, you know, even that was 19-3. And, I mean, there was never a moment where you're on the edge of your seat. I mean, the Cowboys just, you know, ran it down the Giants' throat, just controlled the ball basically the whole game. The Giants had one decent drive. I mean, there was just a lot of games like that. I guess Seattle and Green Bay was an exception to the rule. It was pretty exciting. I'm trying to think of other games that were played out there. Most of them were just, you know, stinkers. Philadelphia looks pretty good against the Redskins. Even the Steelers and the Browns, I mean, you know, I know the Steelers won and the Browns looked okay, but man, you know, the Steelers, you know, they look great on one drive, and then Roethlisberger just looks like he's like 50 years old on the next drive. It's, you know, I guess that's the way it's been going the past couple of years, but I think you could take his name out of those, that elite level of quarterbacks that we were putting him up in for a while. I mean, really, with the offensive talent he has there, they should be putting up, you know, 40, 50 points a game, and, you know, they're barely getting by Cleveland. Another game that I guess surprised me was Houston and Jacksonville. Jacksonville just, you know, bum-rushed Houston, got 10 sacks. And I was saying this the other day, I don't get how, you know, I'll never understand the NFL coaches who will play experience over talent at the quarterback position. When you have, and I don't mean like the Jets who are playing McCown over Hackenberg, because we know Hackenberg sucks. So, you know, it's not like they're holding back some otherworldly talent unless, you know, you're unclever who thinks Hackenberg is going to be Joe fucking Namath. But, you know, you have a guy like Deshaun Watson on the bench who, you know, he can play and he's mobile and your offensive line sucks. And you start the season with Tom Savage as your quarterback. It's just mind-boggling. He never had a chance back there. He's a terrible quarterback to begin with. And you saw him benched after the first half. And, you know, Watson came in and got the Texans their only touchdown of the game. But, you know, I think that game, like, you know, that was really the you know, what I felt week one was in the NFL. It was just a lot of shitty play, a lot of bad offensive line play, a lot of bad quarterback play, and, you know, a lot of overreactions. Jacksonville's not as good as they looked on Sunday. The Patriots aren't as bad as they looked on Thursday. You know, it's hot takes coming out of, you know, every other angle. You know, the Giants need to win week two. It's a must win. You know, it's just, it's the world we live in, but, you know, it's a long season and there's a lot of football still left to be played.
Yeah, I think your description of the fifth preseason week, that's a good description. There were definitely surprises, but a lot of these games, I'm not going to argue with you, especially the Dallas game, that was a dud. I mean, I don't even think I watched a lot of it, but when I was watching it, it was just excruciating to watch. I think Mike will elaborate on that a little bit later. But we first go to Andy for your recap of the week one NFL action.
Yeah, I think Colin Kaepernick should replace Tom Brady. Kareem Hunt is the next to Damian Tomlinson. You know, the Rams are going to be 13-3. Overreactions galore, but there were some disturbing trends that we've seen for a few years now. You know, Ron hit the nail on the nose with Andy Dalton. The more things change, the more things stay the same, and there's a lot of bad quarterbacks in the NFL. Andy Dalton's one of them. Carson Palmer is a bag of bones. You know, that game was entertaining for a little bit, and then in the second half, the Cardinals just disintegrated, and Carson Palmer looked horrible. Monday night, the Saints, the new-look defense. What new-look defense? It's the same garbage that we've seen year after year out of them, and you let Sam Bradford look like Fran Tarkenton, but then again, year after year, Saints defense stinks. And that game was over in the end of the first half when the Saints pinned the Vikings about like the 10 or 5-yard line. And then the Saints decided to use timeouts in an attempt to get the ball back. You're not that type of team. And you just gave Minnesota was content on going to the half the way it was. And they ended up scoring a touchdown because Sean Payton's a fucking dumbass. The Eagles-Redskins game, that was kind of like a clown, entertaining clown car, hot poo type of game. I don't think Kirk Cousins is very good. They foobarred that game. Green Bay-Seattle was a grinder. Same thing. Seattle's offensive line is all just discombobulated. I think it might get better, but didn't look good. They couldn't run the ball. The only were able to really move the ball when they went into a hurry-up offense. You can't do hurry-up for four quarters because you're going to get tired. And if you do go three and out or have short drives on a hurry-up offense, your defense is going to get gassed as well. So you can't, that's why, do they do hurry-up all the time? Because you can't. They're humans. They get tired. And the big loaf of bread by Wilson was a game changer. Rodgers is amazing. The Falcons, I think, they should have lost to the Bears, but the Bears are terrible. I think the Falcons are definitely going to have a little bit of a hangover effect. Raiders looked great on the road against Tennessee. You know, Raiders were kind of like last year, very similar to the Lions, where every game that they played seemed to be, come down to last possession, and they win by 3 points, 6 points here and there. But Tennessee and Oakland were both labeled as now teams. I think both teams will have good seasons, but it was Oakland definitely came out on top week one in Nashville, so that was good for them. The Sunday night game, as Mad Dog likes to say, sometimes you get football fatigue with these games, but we still watch them no matter how lackluster the quality of play can be from time to time, and it was definitely a little lackluster, but I still managed to enjoy myself watching the games and even stayed with that entire New York-Dallas slugfest. So we'll see what happens week two, but, some bad quarterback play in week one definitely kind of, that would be my theme for the week.
Yeah, I think that's very well said, Andy. Let's now go to Mike and get your recap of the opening week of the NFL.
Well, that there was a plethora of lackluster games when one of the big headlines from the week was Sergio Dip and one of the just most bizarre things you will ever see with his sideline report. And what was the guy doing? Like, if it's your job to be a sideline reporter, I get being nervous, but I mean, come on. I was reading something else and had the game on in the background, and I heard the thing, and I'm just like, am I on acid right now? What just happened? So, but back to the actual games, and I'll get right into the Giants. I don't think that this is a week one overreaction, because you now look at, and one of Andy's favorite people on Twitter, Kim Jones, actually retweeted this, which I'm shocked she brought it up, because we know that she's just a, giant apologist. this is now seven straight games for the Giants, dating back to last year, including the playoff game, where they have failed to get 20 points. And it's not just the offensive line. It really isn't. There was a thing by Pro Football Focus that said, with their stats, sometimes I don't take them as gospel because, with the way they measure things and their game scores, it can be a little bit misleading at times. But the offensive line wasn't the entire problem. Even when Eli's getting time to throw, you see him, he's missing open receivers. He's not hitting guys in the hands. He's throwing the ball behind people. And, let's be honest, the guy's 37 years old, or 36 or 37. He's started 200 straight games. He's taken a lot of punishment over the years. And you know what? I've never been an anti-Eli guy. I haven't been like a super, he's Hall of Fame, blah, blah, blah. He's elite, It doesn't really matter. He's been a very effective quarterback. But if he can't raise his game beyond the level that we've seen over the second half of last season and going into this week, the Giants have a major problem. Because that defense, it looks legitimate, but, if you have time, you got to hit your open receivers. And I think part of it is you see a lot his footwork. He just, it just seems like he's a step slow, getting set up to where he wants to throw the ball. So, look, with his age, it wouldn't shock me if he's through. Now, we got to give him more time, obviously. But, as a Giants fan,
I don't think I'm jumping the gun there with saying that, hey, this could be a concern going forward. And, you know, if it is, that's the season. So I'm not going to jump off the bridge yet, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah,
as for some other storylines. Oh, yeah, just real quick, you guys touched on it. Why Tom Savage is starting and why, you know, Bill O'Brien, as Andy likes to say, seems to fall into that category of a delicate genius. I mean, what are you doing? If you have no offensive line, Tom Savage stinks anyway. Just start Deshaun Watson. Now, are they actually going to start him this week? Because he was just saying, oh, I haven't decided on the starter yet. Really? You might as well have me started quarterback instead of Tom Savage. It's not like you could do much worse, seriously. So I don't know what he's thinking. Kansas City Chiefs, you know, I thought the line on that game was a little bit odd, like why they were such a big underdog. I didn't quite expect them to win like that, but, you know, the Pats are the Pats, and we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. So I wouldn't be jumping off the bridge yet if I'm a Pat fan, but obviously a substandard performance for them. And other things that surprised me. You know, actually, I thought, and I'll get to this with my picks, that Sam Bradford actually looked very, very good to me. Now, I know he hasn't had a great history, but, you know, he really hasn't gotten a chance to play on a team with a competent line, and he's taken a lot of abuse. But, you know, the guy did set a record for completion percentage last year. Now, obviously, a lot of that is he's not throwing the ball down the field, but he has a lot of weapons around him. And I really like Dalvin Cook, too, so kind of high on the Vikings. So, and you'll hear more about that during my picks. But I think you guys were right. It was kind of a ho-hum week, but it was nice to have football back at least.
Yeah, I mean, definitely give us some more stuff to talk about. So week two, we expect better things. And now we go to the picks. And once again, I'll start. We'll get it going here with these two selections. All right, we're going to start with the game in Florida, and thank goodness that Florida's doing a little bit better since the events of Hurricane Irma. Obviously, still a lot going on over there, and a lot of rebuilding to do, people with power outages, but it looks like a lot of folks over there are doing okay, and then that's good news. I mean, it's flooded as hell and everything, and there's a lot of rebuilding efforts to go, but in the end, I think Florida may end up rebounding from this yet, so I'm very happy from that standpoint. Wishing the best for that state. So with that said, you have the Jaguars in Jacksonville hosting the Tennessee Titans. And Jaguars are the number one team out of everybody to pump the brakes on. They're only getting 1.5 at home against the Titans. I don't think the Titans are a bad team. So the Titans are laying the 1.5. I will take it very, very quickly. Titans minus 1.5 in game number one. Game number two, the Jets. You know, the Raiders have the history of beating the Jets at Oakland. It has happened for a very long time. But the problem is the Raiders are not the kind of defense that would beat anybody by 14 points, especially with the way that Jack Del Rio plays prevent defense at the end of these games. So I think the point spread's too large. We will go Jets plus 14. To keep it a little bit closer at the black hole in Oakland. So to repeat, Titans minus 1.5 and the Jets plus 14 for NFL week two. Next up, we go to Andy in Seattle, and Andy, it's all yours for the picks.
Thanks, Dave. Well, we're going to be a homer, potentially against better judgment, but we're going to take New England on the road, giving 6.5 against the Saints, and I know you are going to be anti-Saints. You're better off being anti-Saints against the road because when they're on the road, because they do still play well at home. But you know, they definitely play well at home. They, you know, they beat Seattle there. They defend it pretty well. But I'm going to pick against them, even though they're home. I'm going to take the Pats, give them 6.5. And I know I took them last week, so it's kind of boring, but. You know, this game hopefully should be an instance where Patriots release some frustration after a game last week where if Gronkowski catches a ball that he usually catches, it's a 14-0 game, and Kansas City basically has to completely go against their traditional play call, basically throw away their playbook and go into a pass, play catch-up mode, which they're usually not accustomed to doing. But obviously that didn't happen. You saw what happened. Everyone saw what happened. The Patriots had a couple blown assignments on defense. Brady, you know, in the fourth quarter, the offensive line definitely broke down, but he had plenty of time in the most of that game, and Brady was basically, he was missing some throws. You know, him and Cooks had good rapport in the early going, but and Amendola, he was thrown to him pretty well, and he got a concussion, but he didn't have the usual rhythm and timing that he had as the game progressed. So hopefully that will improve against a Saints team that basically had no defense. It never has a defense. I don't care if Rob Ryan's there. He's not. They just don't have a defense for Drew Brees, the ass clown. And you know, I think the Patriots will mix it up. Hopefully Gronkowski can have a better performance. You know, people in Boston and the fans and the haters all think he's old and he's getting washed up because, you know, Barry was able to have his way against Gronk before he got hurt, and usually Gronkowski demands a double-team scenario, but not against Kansas City for whatever reason. I'm just rambling here. You know, I think Tom Brady will have a better show than he did on last Thursday. They've had time to stew it over, and hopefully they will just take out their aggression against the Saints. So give me Patriots minus 6.5 for game number one. Game number two, here's another trap. Rematch of the NFC Championship game. I will take the Packers getting 2.5 on the road at Atlanta. Now, why are we taking Green Bay? I don't know. I mean, did we watch them play Atlanta last January where basically Atlanta just polarized them? Yeah, we did. But it's hard to bet against Aaron Rodgers. And as I say this, I can just see Julio Jones just having a mammoth game against the Packers defense. But hopefully that won't happen. You know, I'm just taking this game based on the fact that I think Atlanta might have a hangover effect. And I know they're a totally different team when they're, you know, when they're at home and on that quick field as opposed to grass on the road. So, yeah, gambler beware. But Sunday night game should have juice. Now, Rodgers, I know the revenge factor can be kind of cliche and, you know, built up and mean nothing, but I'm going to say there's a revenge factor going on this weekend. And, you know, Green Bay, they're healthy for the most part. So, defense a little better. I know Seattle had no offensive line, so, you know, just because they held Seattle to 9 points, I don't know if that means much. I guess we'll find out as the weeks progress, but give me Green Bay getting 2.5 against the Falcons, and give me Patriots giving 6.5 at the Saints. Two road teams for week two NFL.
Alright, thanks for the picks, Andy, and it might end up being a popular pick amongst many bettors, that Packers pick. That is going to be an interesting one to watch. Looking forward to that game. All right, Ron, it's all yours for picks whenever you're ready.
All right, pick number one, I'm going checker on a checker with Andy. I'm taking New England minus 6.5 over the Saints. You know, we were led to believe that the Saints defense was going to be different this year, and sure didn't look like it on Monday night. And you know, when are we gonna get rid of this Saints franchise as we know it? I don't mean the franchise in general. I mean the whole Sean Payton, Drew Brees, marriage there that's gone on. You know, it seems like it's gone on forever. And I mean, it just gets. It's almost like the Saints are like the University of Tennessee version in the NFL. You know, every year they're going to be better and they're going to be good, and people pick them to make the playoffs, and you know, it seems like the past 4 or 5 years they just come out and
You know, 7-9, 8-8, 7-9, 8-8. I would think this is the last year you're going to see that. The setup of the way it is now. Breeze is a free agent. Peyton will probably be on his way out. But they're tough to watch sometimes. And yeah, I think New England will have a chip on their shoulders. They have basically 3 or 4 extra days rest. And Belichick to prepare for the Saints. So I'll take the Patriots -6.5. And my second game, I'm going to take the Chiefs at home -5.5 against the Eagles. I do think the Chiefs are going to be a pretty good team this year. Good for Kareem Hunt that he had a good game Thursday night. We'll see how good he ends up being, but. And we all know Alex Smith is a game manager who will throw out a stinker every once in a while. But I do think the defense is legit. Tyreek Hill can score anytime he touches the ball. And I do think the Eagles are going to be better this year. I don't think they're going to be as good as they looked last weekend against the Redskins. I think the Redskins are going to be one of the shittier teams in the NFL this year. Carson Wentz looks good, but he's going to be facing a tough defense, and it's on the road in Arrowhead, always a tough place to play. I can see it being a touchdown game, but I'll take the Chiefs -5.5 over Philly for game number 2.
All right, thanks for the picks, Ron, and now we go to John in Connecticut's week number 2 NFL picks, and here they are for you via the text. For game number 1, he's going to select the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, another Florida game. They are at home against the Bears. As we've all been saying here on the program, the Bears stink. And I think when you talk about a team with a pretty good amount of talent, and you're talking about a team, I don't even know if they've played a game yet, because I think the first game was supposed to be, Tampa Bay and Miami or something like that, and the Hurricane postponed that. So if I'm remembering correctly, this is the first game of the season for them. So Bucks -7 at the Bears, game number 2. He will ride the wave with the Rams, -3 at home against the Washington Redskins, who definitely looked a little limited on offense. So to repeat for John, Bucks -7, Rams -3 for week 2 in the NFL. All right, so let's go back to our guest picker. That would be Mike in North Jersey. And Mike, it's all yours for the week 2 picks.
Okay, for my first pick, I'm going to take the Vikings +6 against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, I touched on it before, and I think you guys are right with how the Saints every year, they get too much credit, but I was still very impressed by the Vikings. Like I said before, Sam Bradford, was it so much the Saints defense? I don't know. I saw him make some pretty good throws, and, he's a guy that when he was on the Eagles, one of my really good friends is an Eagles fan, so I'd always bust his balls. You guys got Sam Bradford. That's going to work out real well. Of course, then they traded him, once they drafted Carson Wentz after that, really just a terrible injury to Teddy Bridgewater. But, he showed me something last week. I really like the Vikings now with if Bradford is somewhat legitimate and with Dalvin Cook, who really, his first few carries last week, he seemed a little bit, skittish. He wasn't really hitting the hole that hard. But once he got into the flow of the game, he really, really looked good. So, if the Vikings and Pittsburgh, let's just talk about, maybe Cleveland's a little bit better, but if for Pittsburgh to struggle a little bit against Cleveland, that's shocking. And, maybe I'm overreacting a bit to week 1 here, but, I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Vikings win this outright. I am questioning myself a little bit, believing in Sam Bradford, but I'm going to trust my intuition here on this one. So give me the Vikings getting 6 points against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, my second pick, Vid, I'm going to go checker on a checker with you. I think Jacksonville only being a 1.5 or what did you have? 1.5 on that game?
Yeah, 1.5. Yeah.
Tennessee? Yeah, so I'll go 1.5 too. That's fine. that's a complete overreaction to just the waxing that they gave the Houston Texans, who just looked awful. And, you know, maybe something with the Texans, maybe the hurricane played a factor there. You know, a lot of the players obviously live locally in the area, and you got to figure their minds weren't there. And then just starting Tom Savage, like I said before, it made absolutely no sense. So when you have that kind of quarterback play, yeah, I say this as a joke, Alabama could have shut them down on could have shut the Texans down. Obviously, we know they wouldn't, but it's just to point out how bad the Texans look. So Jacksonville only laying 1.5 there. I mean, I'm sorry, Jacksonville's not that good. And I know that he's been a bit up and down, and he had that serious injury last year with the broken leg, but I'm still a fan of Marcus Mariota. I think, you know, he's a complete package there, and, yeah, he's not going to be maybe an elite quarterback, but I think he's got the skills, especially while he's still a younger guy and still a fleet of foot, to get the job done. You know, I like that running back combination with DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry, and I just think that Tennessee has kind of been trending in the right direction. You know, I think this is a pretty easy game. Just a complete overreaction. But, well, you know, Vegas is smart. They know that, I guess, the line wouldn't be 1.5 if the money wasn't reflecting it. But, you know, people are mongos. And, of course, we see this in golf all the time with, you know, if Tiger Woods ever plays again, he's going to get odds that are just, you know, don't make any sense. But that's a topic for our master show, I guess, in April. But it makes no sense to me that Jacksonville is only a 1.5-point dog against a good Tennessee team. I don't care how good they looked last week. I think that's a bit of a fluke, and it's going to show itself out this week. So expect Tennessee with a relatively easy win. Now they are coming off a loss to the Raiders. But I think the Raiders are a legitimate Super Bowl contender this year, so I'm really not going to penalize them for that result.
All right, Mike, thanks for the picks, and thanks for hanging with us for football picks this week. It's been a lot of fun, and guys, I reciprocate that to all of you. It's been good to have you back, Ron, at chatting with us, and we look forward to continuing our journey throughout the football season. So, guys, have a good weekend and enjoy all the games as the temperature starts to cool down a little bit slowly. But surely. So it should be hopefully a good time this weekend, and hopefully all the best to all of you. Guys, take care, and looking forward to more of the same next week. And Mike, good luck to your picks. Good luck to all your guys' picks. And we'll do it again in a week from now. So take care, guys, and have a good one.
All right.
Go Red Sox, boys.
Yeah, good. Yeah, all three of you guys are Red Sox fans, right?
Yep.
Wow, I didn't know that. Good point. All right. Take it easy, guys. All right.
All right. Good luck, everyone.
Okay.
Take care.
All right, fellas. Well, that's it for the show. Good. Thanks again to everybody. Ron in New Jersey, Andy in Seattle, Mike in North Jersey, and all of you guys listening in. It's a good spot. Take it easy, everybody. Enjoy all the games. Enjoy all the baseball, too, as that goes down the stretch. Well, and enjoy your weekend. We'll see you next time.